Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 17, 2017. A News Gazette exclusive, alternate location for proposed arena. Developer, old feed mill site, more suitable and cheaper. The Champaign developer, Peter Fox, believes there's a better site for an indoor University of Illinois multi-sport center. Right across the street from State Farm Center at the southwest corner of St. Mary's Road and 4th Street. And next to his iHotel and conference center. To be honest, obviously it would help the hotel. That's clear, but the hotel is doing pretty well, frankly, said Fox, who opened the hotel 9 years ago. I think it's an easier, cheaper, more logical site, he said. That's in comparison with another plan unveiled in July to build an arena in downtown Champaign as part of what developer Hans Gratolution said would be a $150 million project. That also would include a hotel, conference center, office building, and expansion of the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District's Illinois Terminal Building. Gratolution said at the time he hoped to build the facility and lease it to the U of I for use by a number of athletic programs, including a possible Division I hockey team. The U of I is expected to begin a feasibility study next month of whether to undertake a hockey program, said Associate Athletics Director Kent Brown. There is no timeline for its completion, he said. Gratolution's project, meanwhile, will go before the Champaign City Council Tuesday night for the first of what shall be several study sessions. Fox said Wednesday that he has been meeting with Champaign officials, City Council members, and U of I Athletic Director Josh Whitman to promote the South Champaign location. Now the site of a 90-year-old feed mill slated for demolition. The site is owned by the U of I, Fox said, and he wouldn't build, operate, or own this proposed sports facility. We were kind of looking at this as being a facility to move it along, he said. We have no portfolio. We have not been asked by Josh to do anything. We're just presenting what we think might be a viable opportunity. But if Josh decides he's not ready or he decides to put it someplace else, that's his call. We're trying to be competitive. Brown said the U of I's Division of Intercollegiate Athletics is making no promises to anyone. Josh and the DIA have discussed possible facilities with multiple parties, as the facility is obviously a major component of the study. But there certainly have been no commitments, Brown said. Fox said he believes the 6.2-acre South Champaign site is superior. What we're trying to say is that we can be ready quickly. It's a suitable site because all the utilities are at the site, and in addition, we built two new drainage ponds that will handle all the storm water, including the feed mill site, if something were to be built there, he said. It also is the only site in CU with chilled water, part of the 2004 U of I project extended to the site. The benefit of the chilled water is that it is substantially cheaper, 15% to 20% in terms of utility bills, and it's quiet because you don't have those massive condensers and the reliability is better. There are also our 4,000 parking spaces nearby, Fox said, and 700 hotel rooms within a quarter mile. I think people, whether they come from this community or other communities for athletic events, they want easy access. They don't want to fight the traffic, and so we think this site addresses that, he said. It's a big blob plopped down. Fox, who with Danville businessman Lou Mervis had proposed an ice arena at the U of I in 2003, said he believed there's a market for Division I hockey here. The weather turns in early November and people are looking for things to do indoors, he said. I think there are a lot of good hockey players in this state. The Blackhawks are as popular as any other professional team in the state. You've got hockey in St. Louis, Indianapolis, and a lot of youth hockey. Fox City has met Gratolution once. I'm impressed that he got the downtown Champaign Hyatt built. That's a nice facility, he said. But he said he doesn't think a large building with a 5,000-seat arena would be a good fit for downtown Champaign. I don't think it's the right thing downtown because these facilities are gigantic. We think ours would consume 6 acres. It's a big blob plopped down, he said. I'm sure there are merits with what they want to try to do downtown. So we've been careful in meeting with the city and city officials that we're not trying to sell against downtown. I like downtown. He said downtown Champaign is a reason, frankly, why a lot of the young people in the U of I Research Park choose to stay in Champaign-Urbana. But he added, if I was the city, I would use whatever dollars they have to promote more housing downtown and create more residents downtown who consume more services, that then people provide more services that people are theoretically clamoring for. Very complicated to build. Fox said he didn't believe a privately developed arena was economically feasible. My personal opinion is I've seen one of these that would be privately owned that is anywhere near feasible unless I happen to get an NBA or NHL franchise for it, he said. Even with use from youth and high school sports, Fox said he didn't think it would work. Youth sports is affordable sports, he said. If you're lucky, a lot of times when you get revenue for something like that, and I think the current U of I ice arena would attest to it, you're lucky to pay your bills. So when you build a beautiful new structure that's going to cost a substantial amount of money, how do you make the debt payments? These are very complicated to build. You can always get a lot of feasibility consultants and other people to say, oh, build it. Grotolution said Champaign Wednesday that he had not seen plans for a hypothetical arena in South Research Park. So I couldn't really compare the two, but I'm guessing they are vastly different. He added, we have been overwhelmed with positive support for the arena and requests for additional office space, retail space, and apartments, not to mention the expansion of vital community service brought about by our joint venture with MTD. A first day scare. As Jennifer Schott McCoy was waiting for the bus to drop off her daughter after the first day of school, she heard a loud crash. We opened the door and I was like, there's a bus in the backyard, Schott McCoy said Wednesday. It's not the first thing I thought I would see. In her neighbor's yard, a school bus had run over a tree before hitting the corner of the house at 1106 West Kirby Avenue about 2:30 p.m. The homeowner, who was inside during the crash, wasn't injured. At first, Schott McCoy was worried about her daughter. My initial thought was, is my daughter on the bus, she said. It wasn't my daughter's bus number, thankfully. None of the 13 students who attend Unit 4's International Prep Academy were injured, though they were shaken up. They were all crying and screaming, Schott McCoy said. It was a very scary situation for everyone, I'm sure. Based on preliminary investigations, the driver, who wasn't identified, suffered a medical emergency that led to the crash, Champaign Unit 4 and Champaign Police said. The driver was taken to a local hospital and the crash remains under investigation. The driver was taken to review medical needs, if any, Unit 4 Superintendent Susan Dola said at the scene of the crash. We don't have any information on the status of the driver, but my understanding is the driver was alert during the transport. The students were taken back to IPA to be picked up by parents and guardians who were notified of the crash. After neighbors and Champaign Fire and Police personnel helped the students and driver off the bus, workers cut down the rest of the tree so the bus could be towed. Zola said accidents happen from time to time, but that crashes like this aren't typical. We serve 10,000 students. We run 66 buses and transport about 4,000 students each day when schools are up and running, Sola said. We recognize that in a large organization, we'll have a situation now and again. This isn't typical, but our staff and Champaign Police and Champaign Fire responded very appropriately and in an expedient way to secure the area and make sure individuals were safe and cared for. AG calls for Bill of Rights. Reform awaits Governor Rauner's approval or veto. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan urged Governor Bruce Rauner to sign legislation that she said would reform the student loan industry and help student loan borrowers repay their loans. Dealing with student loan debt is an issue that impacts absolutely everybody. It doesn't matter where I go, it doesn't matter what I talk about. That is the number one thing that people come up to me to discuss, Madigan said. Following a forum Wednesday at the Champaign Public Library, when you look at the number of defaults, it's increasing every day. 3,000 people across this country stop paying their loan every single day because too many of them have ended up with poorly or unaccredited degrees from for-profit colleges, and the economy is not supporting a lot of people getting great jobs. Senate Bill 1351 would create a student loan bill of rights to better protect borrowers from abuses in the industry, Madigan's office said. The legislation was approved 34 to 15 in the Senate and 63 to 48 in the House. Senator Scott Bennett, Democrat of Champaign, said there were a lot of lobbyists lined up against the bill. What this bill does is require the lender to sit down with a scared, nervous student who's about to sign up for a mountain of debt, in some cases more than a house would cost in downstate Illinois, he said. And now we're requiring them not just to show a part of the options, but all the options on the table. There's a lot of money to be made by unscrupulous lenders that don't want that student to know what deal they're making. Madigan said she doesn't know if the governor will sign the legislation. Unfortunately, many of the reforms that I worked hard at the federal level to have put in place are being eliminated by the current U.S. Department of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, she said. And the concern is part about whether or not Rauner will sign the Student Loan Bill of Rights is that he's been very supportive of Secretary DeVos. Without the federal loan protections, Madigan said, it's absolutely imperative that they be available at the state level. The Attorney General's office has established a student loan helpline, 800-455-2456, to aid student borrowers with information and resources about repayment options and how to file a complaint about student loan services. Madigan touts initiatives. Democratic Attorney General Lisa Madigan said she doesn't know Erica Harrell, the Urbana attorney who announced Tuesday that she wants to be the Republican nominee next year and hopes to keep Madigan from being elected to a fifth term. No, I know nothing about her, Madigan said Wednesday at the Champaign Public Library. Even before reporters got a chance to ask her, you tell me. In announcing her candidacy, Harrell said she would be politically independent and pledged to go after political corruption. A video unveiling her campaign mentioned the Madigan Way and showed the Attorney General's father, Michael Madigan, the longtime leader of the Illinois House and Democratic Party. If you look at the record I have in the Attorney General's office, you'll see that we actually put in place a public integrity bureau and have taken very forceful actions when we have had the information and needed to, whether it be against Democratic state representatives or state's attorneys or county sheriffs, Madigan said. In 2005, her office got a conviction in an election fraud case against former State Representative Patricia Bailey, Democrat of Chicago. In 2009, it prosecuted the Iroquois County Clerk on theft, forgery, and official misconduct charges. And in 2013, Madigan's office handled the case in which the former president of a construction firm was ordered to pay $1.5 million in restitution after he admitted using a minority-owned business as a front to obtain a state contract to restore Lincoln Hall at the University of Illinois. Now, the real powers in this area are always going to be the federal government, Madigan said. The tools that they have and the resources that they have really exceed what we have in the Attorney General's office. Often, she said, public corruption cases are too big for counties, state's attorneys, and too small for federal prosecutors. They may not get a lot of coverage, but they're incredibly important to those communities and those taxpayers, in our downstate counties in particular, she said. Reaching her new summit, Uni High runner qualifies for World Triathlon Championships. As a high school athlete, Ariel Summit is a runner. That's it. But as an athlete, she's far more than that. Despite the fact that the two-time Class 1A 800-meter champion can't compete for the Uni High swim team because the sport is in the fall, the same time as cross-country season, she's never given the sport up. Her summers are filled with practices and meets for the Champaign County YMCA Heat. And because of that, the triathlon is a natural sport for the Uni senior. I really enjoy it, Summit said, and it's a great way to cross-train and build up endurance for cross-country season. After winning her second straight state championship in track and field in May and finishing second in the 1600 as well, Summit picked triathlons back up after a two-year hiatus. And last Sunday, she swam, biked, and ran her way into a spot in the 2018 Sprint Triathlon World Championships for the 15 to 19-year-old age group, which takes place next September in the Gold Coast, Australia. Summit did so by finishing fourth in her age group at the National Championships in Omaha, Nebraska. When she finished the 750 meters of swimming and 20 kilometers of biking, Summit was in a spot to qualify, and she closed out the race with a 5-kilometer running time of 19 minutes 14 seconds, the fastest in her age group. "By the time I got to the running part, I knew I was in a spot to qualify," she said. "I was dead tired by the finish. Afterwards, I had these knots in my calves, and it was painful. I'm pretty happy with how it played out." Training for the 3 triathlons she competed in this summer involved plenty of self-sufficiency. White Heat coach Will Barker helped her train for the open water swimming portion of the race. She was mostly on her own when it came to biking and running. "I did my own research," she said, "basically on the running side. I just focused on long run progression. I didn't really do any speed work. I just focused on long runs and building endurance. For the biking part, I had to do a lot of research because I don't really know much about biking. But I basically just focused on building up mileage at first and then trying to get faster because the biking is relatively short." Summit will shift her focus to running this fall when she hopes to beat to best a disappointing 39th place finish in Class 2A last season when iron deficiency dogged her all season. She also has her college career on her mind, with several Division I track and cross-country programs recruiting her, including several Ivy League schools that intrigue her. By next September, when the World Championships take place, she'll likely be in the midst of her freshman cross-country season in college, and she hopes to work out a way to compete in Australia. "This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity," she said. Totally ecliptic. Astronomers' tips for shutterbugs: zoom in and filter. Even if you can't make it down near Carbondale for the solar eclipse totality, you can still get good photos in central Illinois. You can photograph the partial eclipse August 21st, but in addition, don't forget to also get some pictures of your friends or surrounding nature. Astronomer James Waymer says that under the trees you'll see crescents because the leaves act like pinhole cameras. Waymer is serious about his eclipses, and he'll be south of here, where he'll be using his largest camera array in all of the years he has done this. "Down south, I'm running 5 video cameras and 2 still cameras. I'm also using high-definition dash cams. I got 4 of them for $8 apiece. I mean, come on, I can't believe how cheap these electronics are," the retired engineer said of the wide-angle recorders. With his multiple setup, Waymer said he can shoot shadow bands, different diffraction gratings, and the corona of the sun, among others. "You should try to use a digital single-lens reflex camera," he says, "but a cell phone camera is still useful. For people who want to try to take pictures near Champaign and Danville, you need to zoom in. You can use a camera phone, but make sure to use the zoom function," he said. "You really ought to be taking cell pictures through a filter, or if you don't have that pair of those eclipse glasses. If you don't, you could damage the camera. Hold the glasses right in front of the cell phone camera. Parkland instructor Michael Conran will be shooting video. Taking the video stills and CU will require that you use a solar filter continuously, since the solar disk will not totally be covered by the moon," he said, "with about 93% coverage around here. I have rehearsed shooting the sun 3 times with my equipment and have determined that high-def video is what I will do. With 2 cameras, a Canon Rebel with video mode, and my trusty 8-year-old Sony Handycam HD with a 12-power telephoto zoom." He has some advice for people with technical skills, including bracketing the shots. "A video cam that has auto exposure plus manual override on lighting darkening areas appears to provide really great exposure control," Conrad said. "If you have higher zoom power on your video, that is great too." He added, "Remember to have some substantial room around the solar image to capture the sun's corona." J.D. Maloney, a photographer based in Urbana, who specializes in wedding, landscape, and architecture photography, will also be shooting the eclipse in southern Illinois. "For those photographing locally, many things are the same," he said. "If someone has a DSLR and is looking to take up close shots of the eclipse, the longer the focal length of their lens, the better." He agrees with Waymer that people need to use a solar filter on their camera to protect the sensor from damage, as well as protective glasses for their eyes. "And you need to be ready for this novel experience. Practicing with the sun on a regular day before the 21st is helpful so people can determine what settings to use so they're ready for the real thing, Maloney said. Southern Illinois University Eclipse Committee co-chairman Bob Baer teaches amateur photographers the do's and don'ts of eclipse photography. Practice is extremely important, he said. Change all your equipment's batteries, so fresh ones 30 minutes before totality. Charge everything up the night before, he said. And don't forget the human element. Take photographs of your family and friends. Don't spend your whole time taking pictures. Make sure you put the camera down and enjoy the experience, he said. U of I Department of Astronomy, Learning Our Place. Monthly series focus is on Solar Eclipse Monday. If you want to brush up on your solar eclipse facts and maybe pick up a pair of solar sunglasses, here is your chance. The ongoing Astronomy on Tap informational series continues today with a session devoted to Monday's big event. It's scheduled for 6 to 7 p.m. at Pizza M, 208 West Main Street, Urbana. The University of Illinois Department of Astronomy launched the monthly series in 2016 to answer big questions about the universe and share scientific discoveries with the public in a fun way. A conversation with beer, not a lecture, as Professor Joaquin Vieira puts it. Venue holds about 100 people, and the department will have free eclipse sunglasses to hand out to folks who want to watch it on Monday, Vieira said. Vieira and most of his colleagues in the department will be in Gorville in southern Illinois on Monday afternoon, one of the best places to view the eclipse. He's leaving Sunday and camping there with his sons. I've never seen one, Vieira said Wednesday. I'm really excited. It's going to be a very poignant and powerful demonstration of our place in the cosmos. He watched a total lunar eclipse a few years ago, and even that was more powerful than he anticipated. If you realize we are just a little rock floating in space, going around a giant ball of gas, with another rock going around us, he said, you get that feeling. Okay, we're out here too. We're part of the cosmos. No brush-off for broomcorn. At the 60th Annual University of Illinois Agronomy Day, experts will discuss big topics like nitrogen management, herbicide resistance, and profitability. They'll also cover topics that aren't quite at the top of mind of most area farmers, such as broomcorn, a sorghum crop used to make natural brooms. I'm going to be the fun intermission in the middle of Tour A, said Jessica Bubert, a doctoral student studying broomcorn. Most people aren't going to be familiar with it and aren't going to grow it, but it's something that people use a lot, and it's interesting to see what it's coming from. Broomcorn is one of 21 topics on the agenda for today's Agronomy Day, which in the past has brought in anywhere from 700 to 1,100 people, organizer Bob Dunker said. Broomcorn used to be a big deal in central Illinois, particularly for Arcola, the broomcorn capital of the world, which hosts a popular festival in its honor every year. While plastic brooms have disrupted the broomcorn industry, the Nolan Broomcorn Trust continues to support a broomcorn breeding program at the U of I. At Agronomy Day, Boober and Professor Steve Moose will discuss their research to improve broomcorn through breeding and genomic work. They use traditional breeding of broomcorn on the U of I South farms to select for traits that would make better brooms. Right now, broomcorn is too tall, which requires a two-step process to harvest it by hand. Ideally, it would be grown shorter while retaining its long fibers that trap dust. We sort of standardized with input from people in the industry what they'd prefer, Moose said. Right now, most broomcorn is grown in southern Texas and Mexico, where producers have been hit with pests, Bubert said. They hope to develop a broomcorn variety that could be harvested by machines, making it a little more likely to be grown around here. They are also looking into the genome of broomcorn to better understand where it came from, which can be useful for understanding other sorghum plants. Broomcorn brooms aren't too common anymore, although they can be bought at boutique stores and at the Arcola Broomcorn Festival, where Bubert got hers. It works really well. It's strong and it lasts a long time, she said. I recommend everyone use a broomcorn broom. We have some area updates. School seeks criminal charges against vandals. Authorities are investigating two separate criminal acts that occurred in the Bemant school building this summer. One involved a break-in at the school July 2nd, with the other involving the employee of a contractor who had reportedly swiped a projector out of a classroom. About $4,000 worth of damage was caused by vandals who broke a window to gain entry into the middle school room in early July. They vandalized that room, stabbing the smart board, and stole a refrigerator and microwave. Then took the science lab fire extinguisher and completely emptied it out and coated the room, Superintendent Sheila Greenwood said. She believes the suspects knew the school well enough not to enter the hallway where security cameras are in place. Outdoor cameras did show them leaving the science room. There are no cameras in the classrooms. The school district's insurance policy has a $2,000 deductible, so a claim will not be filed. The Piatt County Sheriff's Department is investigating the incident. In a separate act, also taking place last month, the employee of a contractor performing summer work was caught on a security camera taking a projector out of the building, according to Greenwood. The piece of equipment was later recovered, but the district is still planning to pursue criminal charges. The employee was terminated by the contractor, she added. That case is being handled by the Bement Police Department. Village of Loda, officials sick of golf cart drivers. Problems with golf carts being driven illegally at the village persist, and town officials have had enough. I am not a cop, but I know how to call one and file a complaint, Village Board President Carol Arsenault told the 30-some people gathered at Village Hall for Loda's board meeting. Every single golf cart needs to have a permit. To not have one is a violation of our village ordinance. I will swear out a complaint and have you arrested if a violation occurred. Enough is enough, and I will not be chasing people down. It wasn't just village officials complaining about the use of golf cars during the meeting. Resident Steve Wise said he had seen one racing a car on Jefferson Street, and residents Darlene and Don Starkey complained about a kid speeding up and down the streets in a cart by the Catholic Church during last month's Loda Good Old Days celebration. Trustee Kathy Tittle said that with a little advanced planning, I think these problems can be easily rectified. Meanwhile, Arsenault suggested that golf cart permits be issued at a cost of $20 per year, with each permit valid from May 1st through May 1st each year. But resident Terry Hendricks believes $20 per year is far too high. Hendricks said that amount should cover 4 years at a minimum. If you charge $20 per year, you are taking away the savings that we get by operating a golf cart or similar vehicle, Hendricks told the board. Tolono Police Department, new station nears completion. Work on the new Tolono Police Station is expected to be 95% done in 2 weeks, Farnsworth Group's senior architect Scott Birch reported to the Tolono Village Board. There is still a significant list of little things, he said. Village officials will take care of finding a flagpole to put in front of the building and something that wasn't included in the original design. Police Chief Rick Rennie and Public Works Superintendent Matt Craven have been researching prices. City of Monticello, $12,000 fine for sewage violation paid. With a $12,500 check sent, the state's lawsuit against the City of Monticello over sanitary sewer overflow violations has officially ended. The Illinois Attorney General's Office filed a four-count lawsuit on June 4, 2014, alleging the city pumped about 867,000 gallons of untreated sewage, wastewater, and stormwater from 5 manholes to prevent sewage from backing up into residential structures during a large rain. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 17, 2017. Please stay tuned for Part 2.